Blessings of the Triple Gem, Theruvan Saranai. We are continuing with our series on profitable perceptions based on the Buddha's teaching in the Duttiyasanya Sutta. So this is Anguttara Nikaya, Chapter 7, Discourse Number 49, and also Raga Payala, and those are the abbreviated verses at the end of Chapter 7 of Anguttara Nikaya. So today's Dhamma session is on the perception of impermanence, also known as anicca-sanya in Pali. Let's begin by paying homage to the Triple Gem. We can bow our heads in Anjali. Homage to the Buddha, homage to the Dhamma, and homage to the Noble Sangha. As we highlighted in our introductory session, so part one of this series, we are examining each of the profitable perceptions, and this is to clarify the Buddha's instructions and their meaning, and also to understand what they overcome and how to develop each one, referencing other teachings of the Buddha where needed. And then in our final session, we will consolidate them so we can contemplate them, or all seven of them, as a single meditation. We are doing this because there is deep Dhamma within each profitable perception that we need to examine, need to understand, and also to penetrate with the right view. And as we highlighted in the last Dhamma session on the perception of non-delight in the entire world, these profitable perceptions build on each other, chipping away at what we have misapprehended or been deceived by. As we have seen already from developing and cultivating the earlier profitable perceptions, there is also a high degree of giving up, of abandoning of unwholesome or unprofitable perceptions. And so we lean more strongly towards Nibbana, towards cessation of suffering. So as the Buddha has said in the Duttiyasanya Sutta, bhikkhus, these seven perceptions, when developed and cultivated, are of great fruit and benefit, culminating in the deathless, having the deathless as their consummation. And so in the Raga Payala, these abbreviated texts at the end of chapter 7 of Anguttara Nikaya, when developing these seven things, they help us to gain direct knowledge of lust or greed and also more kinds of Dhamma. Lust or greed cannot be dispelled if we allow unprofitable perceptions to take hold of our mind. And so it's only by cultivating and developing these profitable perceptions do the unprofitable perceptions shrink, meaning we are less troubled and we can develop the non-greed path as opposed to the greed path. So far, starting from the end of last year, we've examined the perception of unattractiveness, so asubha-sanya, the perception of death, marana-sanya, the perception of repulsiveness of food, ahare, paticcula-sanya, and most recently, the perception of non-delight in the entire world, sabbaloke anabiratta-sanya. And so with the remaining three profitable perceptions, so this is the perception of impermanence, the perception of not self in what is suffering, and the perception of suffering in the impermanent, we are now coming to the pointy end of our development of these profitable perceptions, meaning our understanding and penetration of the three marks of existence. So sometimes we call it the three characteristics in Pali Tilakana, namely impermanence, anicca, suffering, dukkha, and not self or not me and mine, anatta. So it's important to acknowledge that this is one particular insight pathway when it comes to profitable perceptions. There are other ones that appear in the suttas, such as Girimananda Sutta, and there's also another one in the chapter of 5 of Anguttara Nikaya. So when we develop this particular one, there's a particular sequence, there's a particular development, and it's important to honor this particular one. So in this section, or in this session, part six, we'll be focusing on the perception of impermanence, and this is what helps the mind to shrink away from gain, honor, and praise. So in Pali, this is labha-sakara siloke, or silokam, depending on how we apply it. So with the gradual development of the previous perceptions, we've already touched on impermanency or unlastingness. So if this body, food, and other forms are aging, subject to change, and are death-bound, then the question we often ask is, where is the permanency? We've also looked at feeling and recognized how that's conditioned by contact, which in turn is conditioned by the six sense spheres. So if there's aging of the sense bases, aging of sense objects, and also sense consciousness, then we also experience aging of feeling. So we must also ask, where is the permanency? And we have previously looked at impermanence in a number of our other Dhamma sessions, ranging from what is taught in the Samadhi Bhavana Sutta, so that's Samyutta Nikaya, chapter 22, discourse number 5. And this is the arising and passing away of the 5 aggregates, and also to how we develop the 4 establishments of mindfulness, so Satipatthana, also the enlightenment factor of mindfulness, so Satisambhojanga, and also the enlightenment factor of investigation of Dhamma, so Dhammavicaya Sambhojanga, which all of these are established on understanding impermanence, unlastingness. And our examination of the 4 unprofitable directions, so this is the 4 nutriments, and looking at suffering through the 4 nutriments, specifically the 4th unprofitable direction, which is consciousness as nutriment, so vijnana ahara. This also highlighted the perversion of permanency in what is impermanent that underpins that particular unprofitable pathway. So when we now come to this perception of impermanency as part of developing these 7 profitable perceptions, we need to include these earlier profitable perceptions that we've studied, as well as what we have understood from these other Dhamma sessions into today's contemplation, because it means our baseline is coming from a higher base, one of wisdom, not a low one. So there is some wisdom that we've already developed that is going to help us. And then we also have had this full Dhamma session on the danger of gain, honor, and praise. And this was based on chapter 17 of the connected discourses on gain and honor. And this is in Samyutta Nikaya. So that is also something that we can draw upon. And I do recommend having a look at that session again. So in Pali, this is Lava Sakara Siloke. So Lava is commonly translated as gain, but it can also be translated as acquisition, profit, benefit, possessions, win, success, or reward. So there's Lava. And then Sakara is commonly translated as honor, but also hospitality, respect, worship, homage, reverence, or veneration. And then Siloka is translated as praise, but it also includes fame, popularity, reputable, celebrity, approval, acceptance. So we'll continue to use the translation of gain, honor, and praise for this particular session, but it's good to know that there's a lot that's contained within those Pali words. Now, with the combination of these 3 terms, we can see that there is material acquisition or physical gain, and there's also mental acquisition as another kind of gain. And so in this Dhamma session, we will be deepening our understanding of impermanence and investigating where we still get deceived by permanency, and as a consequence, continue to follow the wrong path. And by doing so, we will see this connection between the perception of permanence and gain, honor, and praise that is part of the greed path. And what we'll see is it's also linked very strongly from how we were looking at that profitable perception of non-delight in the entire world. So having developed that already, that helps us to look at this one. Now, it's important to see that we come to this current birth having misapprehended permanency or lastingness. Out of ignorance and craving, we followed the wrong path. So if we follow the unprofitable or sick perception of permanence and we allow that to stand, then we will remain bound to samsara and this whole mass of suffering. The Buddha is encouraging us to develop this profitable perception of impermanence so that we can overcome taking something as a gain, whether it is a physical or mental form of gain. Let's now deep dive into what the Buddha has said about the perception of impermanence in this Dutiya Sanya Sutta. It was said, the perception of impermanence, bhikkhus, when developed and cultivated, is of great fruit and benefit, culminating in the deathless, having the deathless as its consummation. For what reason was this said? When a bhikkhu often dwells with a mind accustomed to the perception of impermanence, his mind shrinks away from gain, honor, and praise, turns back from them, rolls away from them, and is not drawn toward them, and either equanimity or revulsion becomes settled in him, just as a cock's feather or a strip of sinew thrown into a fire shrinks away from it, turns back from it, rolls away from it, and is not drawn toward it, So it is in regard to gain, honor, and praise when a bhikkhu often dwells with a mind accustomed to the perception of impermanence. So the first thing to do is to admit that this profitable perception of impermanence, anicca-saññā, is not how we usually perceive gain, honor, and praise. Instead, when it comes to gain, honor, and praise, there's a misapprehension of permanency, that it will last beyond this moment or a particular instance, and we can expect it into the future. So think of an actor who is getting a lot of attention from the media, movie studios, companies, and fans because of a newly released movie. What would that actor expect moving forward? They would expect that gain, honor, and praise they are presently enjoying, that it will last into the future, and they will be holding to that pleasure or happiness as mere known, with a lot of conceit. Now think about the number of actors who have suffered as a result of the loss of gain, honor, and praise, such as when their fame and popularity fades away, or they go through some kind of situation where they're accused of something nefarious or they're cancelled on social media. Where is the permanency then? So in our lives, we can see the same if we check our own examples. So it could be receiving praise from our parents for our academic performance when we're younger, and then not receiving praise when we start working or having a family. Or it could have been having many admirers or people turning to look at us due to our beauty or attractiveness, and then as our looks fade, those admirers disappear. Or it could be gain, honor, and praise from a personal relationship, and then seeing that evaporate when the relationship comes to an unexpected end or comes into trouble. Or it could be receiving high honors and awards for some research we conducted, and later being challenged and exposed for problems with the results of our research, that they couldn't be replicated or what we discovered doesn't hold up. Or it could be rising through the ranks of a company to the top position, where we're given a great remuneration package with lots of perks, titles, honors, and invitations. And then we get accused of misusing company funds or insider trading or taking kickbacks. And then we find ourselves put in jail. Or in Dhamma, we receive offerings, the best seat, invited first to take food. And people bow and offer praise after conducting a retreat. But then at the next retreat, we don't get the same treatment. And so whatever the case may be, whether it's short, medium, or long term, it's helpful to think of some of the examples of where we may fall for gain, honor, and praise, both physical and mental acquisition, and to acknowledge how we take it as lasting or permanent, and to see how our expectation is also set that way. It's also important to see that whatever gain we cling to, it relates back to this form. So as with our last session on how the profitable perception of non-delight in the entire world helps the mind to shrink away from the world's beautiful things, what we attach to is the feeling. So gain, honor, and praise means sukha, pleasure, or happiness for us. We don't see it as dukkha, pain, or suffering. If we take it as pleasure, then there's a protectiveness or a stinginess that is playing its part here as well. As we've examined when developing the Vatopama Sutta, so the simile of the cloth meditation, we know that there are five kinds of stinginess. So stinginess regarding gain, lava macharya, stinginess regarding dwelling or abode, avasa macharya, stinginess regarding families or groups, kula macharya, stinginess regarding reputation, vana macharya, stinginess regarding dhamma knowledge, dhamma macharya. So this stinginess, which is really a mental stain or defilement, it arises because we give value to the feeling in regard to these five different areas. We are protective of me and my gain, me and my dwelling, me and my families or groups, me and my reputation, and me and my dhamma or knowledge. And so we know stinginess is conditioned by disparaging or divisiveness in Pali Palasa, where we measure, divide, and split. So by giving value to feeling, if we take it as a gain, both physical and or mental, then we believe there is something gratifying. This is how we follow or spin the greed path. And when we strongly identify with it, this means that we take it as me and mine or self. So the wrong view is kicking in. And as our conceit grows, we think we can make it last. And so we think that this gain, honor, or praise that we're receiving is permanent. So our perceptions that there is pleasure, that it's permanent, that it's worth taking as me and mine, they're actually corrupt or sick and very unprofitable. So this is the important point why we need to develop the perception of impermanence, anicca-sanya. In the Asatha Sutta, this is Ankutta Nikaya chapter 6, discourse number 112, the Buddha taught the perception of impermanence is to be developed for abandoning the view of gratification. And then in the Anicca-sanya Sutta, which is in Samyutta Nikaya chapter 22, discourse number 102, the Buddha stated, when the perception of impermanence is developed and cultivated, it eliminates all sensual lust. It eliminates all lust for existence. It eliminates all ignorance. It uproots all conceit, I am. So the development of the perception of impermanence is a powerful practice, and it helps us to overcome a great deal of corruption in the mind. What we're really seeing is, if I am existing like this now with gain, honor, and praise, then I take a view that in the future I can exist, I can live like this with this gain, honor, and praise, and I think it's very gratifying. And so we miss the point about permanency, and even we misapprehend the pleasure. And so we think that's me and mine. So let's now turn our attention for a moment to the Buddha's teachings on gain, honor, and praise. Let's just refresh our memory on this. So in chapter 17, or the connected discourses on gain and honor in Samyutta Nikaya, the Buddha used very harsh words for gain, honor, and praise. And I do highly recommend going back to that Dhamma session we had about the danger in gain, honor, and praise. The Buddha stated that gain, honor, and praise are dreadful, bitter, vile, obstructive to achieving the unsurpassed security from bondage. And he gave numerous similes to highlight that, including how gain, honor, and praise catches you like a fish on a hook, or a dung beetle proud of their large dunghill, or a thunderbolt strike, or a poison dart, or never at peace like a jackal afflicted with a disease called mange, or a bird flung about by the gale winds. So it's good to look at some of our own examples of gain, honor, and praise to see whether we perceive them as the same as the Buddha, that the Buddha says dreadful, bitter, vile, obstructive to Nibbana. And then also these similes, are we like those similes when intoxicated with gain, honor, and praise? Or have we actually understood the dangers? Now, the honest truth when we examine, when we contemplate, is that we don't see the danger. And when we're gratified by gain, honor, and praise that comes from our careers, our roles, our skill, from our family, from our relationships, from community service, even Dhamma sharing, we become very strongly identified with it. And we believe that instead of dreadful, bitter, and vile, we think, oh, it's great, it's sweet, it's wonderful. And so we haven't a clue that it obstructs Nibbana because we're fully invested in it. Now, if this is the case, then we can identify in a perverse way with the Buddha's similes, that we are actually caught like the fish on a hook. We don't see the danger. And wouldn't that be painful? And we are proud and conceited like this dung beetle and the large dunghill. If we look at that analogy or that simile, it's excrement. It's dung, for goodness sakes. And so what is there really to be proud of? Like Buddha used that particular simile for good reason. And then if we're struck by a thunderbolt, so we're taking this gain, honor, and praise, we're actually thinking it's fine. But if we were really struck by a thunderbolt, it's deadly, or we would suffer the equivalent of a great deal of suffering. And then if we're struck by a poison dart, again, deadly or the equivalent of a great deal of suffering. And then if we're like the jackal afflicted with a disease, so being like a mangy jackal, then what is in fact, in that case, a great deal of suffering and discomfort. And then like the bird and the gale force winds, we would be at the mercy of those strong forces, a bit like how the Buddha talks about gain and loss, pleasure and pain, the eight worldly winds. If you remember those things, then it's a bit like that as well. We're at the mercy of those things, but we don't see it. And so the Buddha mentions that his cousin Devadatta, in these discourses many, many times, and he used to talk about Devadatta in this context, particularly in chapter 17 of the Samyutta Nikayas, because he was talking about the downfall of his cousin associated with gain, honor, and praise. So we need to remember, if this helps us, that if we are swept up by gain, honor, and praise, and we can't see the reality of these things, then we are following the same path as Devadatta. And so for most people who understand about Devadatta's downfall, about how he was overtaken, how he was glorifying all the cartloads of offerings that he was given by Prince Ajatasattu, then you really don't want to be associated in that way. And, you know, Buddha says like goes with like. So we don't want to be like Devadatta. There were those that followed Devadatta and they also experienced downfall. We want to be like Venerable Sariputta. We want to be like Venerable Mahamoggallana. We want to be like Venerable Mahakachana. We want to be like Hathakovalavi. And, you know, all these different role models that did very well in understanding and penetrating the Buddha's dispensation and attaining path and fruit and complete liberation. So we should actually recall some of what the Buddha said with regard to Devadatta. So in Sanyutta Nikaya chapter 17, the Buddha has said, because his mind was overcome and obsessed with gain, honor, and praise, Devadatta provoked a schism in the Sangha. Devadatta's wholesome root, so Kusala Mula, was cut off. Devadatta's wholesome nature was cut off. Devadatta's bright nature was cut off. So we don't want those things to be cut off. And so it's something to take into our mind. And he also said, Devadatta's gain, honor, and praise arose to his own downfall and destruction. Just as a plant and tree, a bamboo or a reed yields fruit to its own downfall and destruction, so Devadatta's gain, honor, and praise arose to his own downfall and destruction. Just as a mule becomes pregnant to its own downfall and destruction, so Devadatta's gain, honor, and praise arose to his own downfall and destruction. So dreadful, bhikkhus, are gain, honor, and praise. And then it goes on. But the reality is we need to heed the Buddha's words, really take them to our mind, so we abandon the type of pathway that Devadatta was following. And so when we take the time to investigate and examine, what we need to ask is there really lasting pleasure in what we take in gain, honor, and praise? So Devadatta would have thought, oh, there is permanency in this. I can make this last. This is all about me and mine. And what he didn't see was the immense amount of suffering. And also that there is no permanency in these things. So our perceptions, what we need to ask is, are our perceptions truthful or are they corrupt? You know, we need to use some logic here. So for example, do we see people in the world or close to us having lasting pleasure from their job, relationships, roles, good deeds, awards, promotions, and so on? And do we ourselves experience lasting pleasure in those same things? Now, when you really investigate, you know that there is some pleasure, but it's fleeting. So that permanency does not stand. So the answer is no. And what happens is we don't see how much effort we make to try and replicate that pleasure. We try our best to make it last. We strive harder thinking there is a gain that we can hold on to. And we think it's worth taking as me and mine. But the truth, when we take our real life examples, is that we can't make it last. We suffer greatly trying to reconstruct that pleasure. And it's never the same because of aging. So then it becomes clear that when we misapprehend gain, honor, and praise, rather than turning back or rolling away, we are drawn in because our perceptions are corrupt or sick. We take delight, welcome, and remain holding to these corrupt or sick perceptions. And these corrupt or unprofitable perceptions are confirming the value we've given to pleasurable feeling. Remember, whatever we feel, we perceive. Perceptions are the ones that are confirming that. But what we haven't seen is that these perceptions are based on lies and deception. When we perceive this way, there is volition. This volition or chetana is now constructing consciousness. And our volitional formations would also be corrupt. And so we keep going back to the form and taking it as a game. But that is false and deceptive. Now, if this is the case, then we keep following the wrong path, the greed path. Instead of equanimity or revulsion, we find gratification in what we have constructed, which means we keep developing the wrong path. We keep thinking that's the best, and it obstructs it. It obstructs us from the noble path, the one that would liberate us. So if we never develop the perception of impermanence, then our mind is imbued with gain, honor, and praise. We don't see the danger, and we don't see how it keeps us bound to this whole mess of suffering. So the key point the Buddha has made is to reinforce the development of the perception of impermanence so that our minds shrinks away from gain, honor, and praise, similar to this simile that he's been using a lot of the cock's feather or a strip of sinew thrown into the fire. And as a result, we would be able to develop equanimity or revulsion when we receive gain, honor, and praise, helping us to lean towards nibbana, to ultimately realize nibbana. So how do we develop and cultivate the perception of impermanence? So in the Girimananda Sutta, so we mentioned this in our last session, Anguttara Nikaya chapter 10, discourse number 60. So we find the perception of impermanence in this particular sutta as the very first perception of the 10 perceptions the Buddha explained to Venerable Ananda. Now, with regard to the perception of impermanence, the Buddha stated, and what, Ananda, is the perception of impermanence? Here, having gone to the forest, to the foot of a tree, or to an empty hut, a bhikkhu reflects thus: form is impermanent, feeling is impermanent, perception is impermanent, volitional activities are impermanent, consciousness is impermanent. Thus he dwells contemplating impermanence in these five aggregates subject to clinging. This is called the perception of impermanence. Now, how we have contemplated this is the same as when we do our meditation on the Samadhi Bhavana Sutta, looking at the rising and passing away of these five aggregates subject to clinging. So one thing that's important to note is how we develop these profitable perceptions in the Girimananda Sutta. And I mentioned this earlier, it follows a different insight pathway taught by the Buddha. So in Girimananda Sutta, Anicca-sanya is the first one. But in Dutiyasanya Sutta, the one that we're focusing on, it is number 5 of 7. And this distinction is a significant one as to how we develop the stages of development of the mind, and the insight differs in terms of the stages and insight. So the goal of Nibbana is the same. So with this in mind, remember that what we have highlighted throughout this session, it is our corrupt or sick perceptions that draw us into gain, honor, and praise. Therefore, for this meditation, for this Dutiyasanya Sutta, and the fact that we're coming from a higher base, it's not the first perception that we're developing, we need to apply the Samadhi Bhavana Sutta meditation specifically with regard to perception. So if we look at the arising, so the Samudaya, we see that we take delight, welcome, or express, and remain holding, so abhinandati, abhivadati, ajusaya titati in Pali. And this is how craving arises towards perception. If this is the case, then there's delight. With delight as condition, clinging arises. With clinging as condition, existence. With existence as condition, birth. With birth as condition, aging and death. With aging and death as condition, the whole mess of suffering. So we have the sorrow, lamentation, pain, sadness, and despair. Now, if we have understood the hollowness of perception, the emptiness of perception, that it's not really what we thought it was, that is deceptive, then we gravitate towards the passing away. So the Athangama, this particular recipe that the Buddha has given us. So in this case, we won't take delight, we won't welcome or express, and we won't remain holding. So nabhinandati, nabhivadati, nadrasayatitati in Pali. So craving ceases. With the cessation of craving comes the cessation of delight. With the cessation of delight comes the cessation of clinging, existence, birth, aging and death, and the cessation of the whole mess of suffering. So to do this meditation, as we've always recommended, it's important to take our own example, because this is how we connect with the Dhamma. For instance, if we take a worldly example, such as gain, honor, and praise from a career or job, the corrupt perceptions would be saying, there is pleasure from the job, the achievements or awards, the promotions and the package, the respect that we receive, the reputation that we've built, and we take that as me and mine. And we expect to keep receiving that in the future, that it is lasting. And we can really examine and ask, is that really true? So if we take delight, welcome, and remain holding to those corrupt perceptions, then craving arises, and this follows that Buddha's inside pathway for samudaya, arising, and the result, as we can see, is sorrow, lamentation, pain, grief, and despair down here. So in other words, the whole mass of suffering. So another worldly example could be the gain, honor, and praise we receive as a good parent. So the corrupt perceptions would be saying that there is immense pleasure in that role, receiving affection, respect, honor, gifts, being known among family and friends in the community for being a good parent. So we take it strongly as me and mine. We identify with it, expecting that to have lasting pleasure into the future. And again, we can examine and ask, is that really true? Is that really true as our children grow up? Is that really true in terms of what's happening from others? So again, that's a good example to really look at and to check. And so another one, if we take a more spiritual example, such as gain, honor, and praise that may arise after giving up household life and ordaining as a monk or nun. So the corrupt perceptions in this case may be saying, as a monk or nun, there is pleasure in receiving lots of gifts and offerings, much more than would have been received as a householder, gaining an immense amount of respect and veneration, maybe also fame, popularity, having a lot of followers, including famous and important people, people we wouldn't have associated with before, giving talks to large audiences, being flown all over the world. So if we strongly identify with that gain, honor, and praise, take it as me and mine, expect to always be treated that way, again, we can examine and ask, is that really true? Is that the pathway to Nibbana? And this example can also be applied for lay people who turn towards the spiritual path and still become intoxicated with gain, honor, and praise by strongly identifying with the Dhamma self and think it gives lasting pleasure. So it can be gain, honor, and praise associated with being a wholesome person, or gain, honor, and praise associated with having connections to a lot of prominent Dhamma teachers and communities, or gain honor and praise associated with being known as a very generous person, a rich lay supporter, or gain honor and praise associated with being a good Dhamma speaker, or gain honor and praise associated with having certain high meditative attainments, gain honor and praise associated with leading a large community, and so on. So again, we plug that into the Buddha's insight pathway for arising, samudaya, so the one on the left. And now when we see that these are unprofitable, corrupt, and sick perceptions that only lead to suffering, then we complete the meditation by not taking delight, not welcoming, and not remaining holding to corrupt perceptions. Then craving ceases. Following the Buddha's insight pathway, the result is the cessation of this whole mess of suffering. So this is a very powerful meditation. So we don't get drawn into gain, honor, and praise. By taking more and more examples from daily life where we have fallen for these things, this will also shine the light on how we keep growing conceit by believing certain unprofitable perceptions. So some of our strong corrupt dhammas can be broken in this meditation. What also comes to mind is the Buddha's simile of a shimmering mirage that he's used for perception in the Penna Pindupama Sutta. This is Sanyutta Nikaya, chapter 22, discourse the 95. And in that particular sutta, the Buddha says, suppose, bhikkhus, that in the last month of the hot season, at high noon, a shimmering mirage appears. A man with good sight would inspect it, ponder it, and carefully investigate it, and it would appear to him to be void, hollow, insubstantial. For what substance could there be in a mirage? So too, bhikkhus, whatever kind of perception there is, whether past, future, or present, internal or external, gross or subtle, inferior or superior, far or near, a bhikkhu inspects it, ponders it, and carefully investigates it, and it would appear to him to be void, hollow, insubstantial. For what substance could there be in perception? So for most of us, we take perceptions or our perceptions as material, weighty, and very substantial. And as a result, we get so corrupted in our mind. These perceptions are confirming what we feel. And what the Buddha asks us to really inspect, ponder, and investigate is whatever kind of perception that we have, whenever we do so, what we find is that it is like this mirage. It's empty or void. It's hollow. It's not substantial. And why is that? Because perceptions are built on lies and deceptions. There's a falsity to it. And so these two can be helpful. Okay, so let's go back to the Duttiyasanya Sutta. And the Buddha goes on to say, if when a bhikkhu often dwells with a mind accustomed to the perception of impermanence, his mind inclines to gain honor and praise. Or if he does not turn away from them, he should understand, I have not developed the perception of impermanence. There is no distinction between my earlier condition and my present one. I have not attained the fruit of development. Thus he clearly comprehends this. So similar to the earlier perceptions, the Buddha has given us this method to check whether we have develop the perception of impermanence correctly. So here he said, if we've done our meditation contemplating the arising and passing of perception, and our mind inclines to gain honor and praise, or it doesn't turn away from it, then we need to understand we haven't developed the perception of impermanence correctly, or the way that we have contemplated or applied the Dhamma is wrong. And this is because there's no difference in the mind before and after our meditation or contemplation. So there's no fruit of development. Now, if this is the case, then it's good to go back and review where we went wrong. So maybe we're attached to the gratification and still haven't seen the danger in gain, honor, and praise. Maybe there's still something we're very protective of or strongly identified with. Maybe there's conceit in what we have. Maybe there's conceit, and so it's obstructing us. Maybe we still believe something will last. That value that we've given, we're still confirming it. We're not seeing the truth. So whatever the case may be, it's important to correct any flaws in our contemplation, because otherwise there's no fruit of development. So we can't allow the unprofitable perception of permanency or lastingness to be there. So in this case, if we still find gratification in gain, honor, and praise, then the important point is that we need to meditate and develop the mind. And then the Buddha has said, but if when he often dwells with the mind accustomed to the perception of impermanence, his mind shrinks away from gain, honor, and praise, and either equanimity or revulsion becomes settled in him, he should understand, I have developed the perception of impermanence. There is a distinction between my earlier condition and my present one. I have attained the fruit of development. Thus he clearly comprehends this. So in contrast to the previous passage, after contemplating, if our mind shrinks away from gain, honor, and praise and is not drawn towards it, and either equanimity or revulsion settles in us, then that's a good thing. So here we understand we've developed the perception of impermanence correctly, because we see this distinction in our meditation and there's fruit of development. So now, when we receive gifts, offerings, praise, popularity, fame, respect, some form of gain, material or immaterial, whatever falls under the umbrella of gain, honor, and praise, we are no longer swayed. We no longer get intoxicated, nor wish to become intoxicated with these things. So when we see the impermanent nature of perception, we don't take anything as me and mine. We understand that what we thought was pleasure is really suffering, so we don't identify it, we don't attach to it. Instead, having seen lies and deceptions of our perceptions, we have more equanimity when we encounter such things, when we receive such things. Or we may have internal revulsion towards such things because we clearly see the danger in strongly identifying or becoming attached. We may actually see in the moment that it happens that it is unlasting, subject to change, suffering, not worth taking as me and mine. So the Buddha's wise words from the Sagatthaka Sutta, this is Sanyutta Nikaya, chapter 17, discourse number 10, can be brought to mind. Whether he is showered with honor, shown dishonor, or offered both, his concentration does not facilitate as he dwells in the measureless state. So if we're able to develop and cultivate the perception of impermanence thoroughly without veering away from it, then really what happens is that there's wisdom, which means there's mindfulness and clear comprehension, satisampajanya. The mind becomes very stable, and this is very evident, and that's how it uplifts to this measureless state of equanimity, really. And so we don't want to go back to following the greed path. That becomes very clear Now we have to develop this. This just doesn't happen. We see it once in our meditation, and then every time in daily life, it's okay, everything's fine. No, we need to develop this. And it's in meditation that one can really penetrate it. So often with our earlier condition, prior to correctly developing the perception of impermanence, we would strongly identify with that gain, honor, and praise as me and mine, take it as lasting pleasure. And in that case, the mind would lack the wisdom. And so what you see is the mind shakes or wobbles. So even in daily life, what's happening is when respect is given, when praise is given, the mind is shaking. It gets excited. It feels gratification. But the distinction, if you really know it, if you see it in meditation, is the mind does not wobble or shake. It's very steady. It sees anicca-sanya. And so if you keep developing this way, then what we do when we go out is it doesn't shake so much in daily life when one is the receiver of certain things like that. It's very helpful. And so the Buddha has confirmed that when we develop and cultivate the perception of impermanence, it's of great fruit and benefit because Nibbana is its final goal and accomplishment. And so in that way, we often see even in Balama Sutta that the highest merit-making in that Buddha's discourse is actually one whiff of the perception of impermanence. It's that powerful. And ultimately, it's a very, very helpful thing towards attaining the final goal of Nibbana. So we've now come to the end of our session on the fifth of the seven profitable directions. So this is the perception of impermanence, anicca-sanya. We can express our gratitude to the Buddha for these powerful teaching. We can also express gratitude to our other teachers, parents, good friends, anyone who encourages us on the Noble Eightfold Path. We can share the merits of this wholesome session with all sentient beings. May all beings be happy and well. May all beings be free from suffering. Blessings of the Triple Gem to all of you, wishing you all well. May you gain what is useful from the Buddha's teachings in our session today and continue to develop and progress on the Noble Eightfold Path and grow in wholesome qualities. Theruvan Saranai.